Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Happy Tuesday morning, everybody. When this show goes online, I will be on an airplane to Philippines. It's been almost a year. I'm checking out the SEO office I'm a business partner of, and I'm excited to see how the things have been built. I will share updates at a future episode. And also, while it was good to go down there, I wish I could take my family, but they did get to Hong Kong for a couple of days from Shenzhen, and we all went cross-border for the RISE conference last week. So that was a really intense, almost a whole week-long conference. We had Casey Lau a couple episodes ago co-hosting about it, and it was a really amazing event full of speeches and booths and networking. It was day and night, like nonstop. I'm still recovering from exhaustion and my Mi Band has so many steps, so it's just crazy. And I also got to catch up with China Accelerator, where they had an awesome happy hour, and I'm actually an alumni of Batch 3 2012, so it was really cool to see all of them. Okay, and now for this week's show, we have Nick Bartlett, who was connected to me by Kieran. And this is a funny story of Kieran. While I've known for over 5 or 6 years, he was dropshipping bar supplies in our e-commerce business I did years ago. Yeah, that's right. He was in the UK, and we had just opened a warehouse in the UK, and he found us online to be a dropshipper in Europe. And it was our first one, like 2010. So we met in person in Hong Kong just last week. But before that, he did connect me with Nick here for this show. So it's amazing that I'm still in touch with Kieran, and we met in person finally, even years after I sold the business. So Nick is going to come online today to share with you about what a lot of people have been asking about, which is logistics. So open your notebook and refer to our show notes at globalfromasia.com/episode129. He's breaking things down. He's going to give you good notes all about different logistics, shipping, ocean, air. I know a lot of people ask these kind of questions. So please, he did give all the information you could possibly think of. Give him a thank you note or maybe even consider his business. That would be awesome. So let's get started. All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. Today, we have Nick Bartlett. He is the sales director at CBIP Logistics Solutions. We got to meet through a common friend, Kieran, and caught up in Hong Kong. And he specializes in providing small to medium-sized enterprises with freight solutions. So logistics and licensed brand, he uses the brand name InExpress, which is has a technology platform that helps with express and cargo shipments and other leading international carriers. So thanks for coming on the show, Nick. Great to have you here.
Oh, no worries, Michael. Thank you very much for having me. It's good to join this podcast series.
Yeah, it's been fun to keep in touch, you know, with Hong Kong business and in a global business. So you're originally from New Zealand?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, a New Zealander who decided to give his craft a go up in Asia and moved to Hong Kong about 2 years ago. And we started a small trading logistics solutions business over a year ago. And we're now sort of trading with a range of and carrying all sorts of different things around the world.
Awesome. Yeah, so I'm excited for this topic. It's always something people are asking about is shipping and different logistics solutions. It's especially important for e-commerce or any product-based business, international business. So maybe it sounds, maybe you'll laugh at this question, but, you know, what is shipping, you know, or like maybe what's the definition?
Yeah, sure. I think shipping, people think shipping is a pretty complex kind of beast. You know, I think they look at it and think it's got a lot of terminology. It's a big asset infrastructure based business, and therefore that kind of makes it pretty complex and hard to understand. But look, fundamentally, it's the act of transporting goods, you know, for which the shipper or the seller either or the receiver pays for that transportation. So even though that's a really basic definition, I think that's kind of core to what it does. I think in today's world, though, shipping, both from a sort of an end user and a logistics company perspective, is much more than just about the act of transporting goods. It's much more around the use of technology, sort of supply chain efficiency and service in order to give kind of the end users what they're all looking for, which is kind of the quickest, most cost-effective and easiest way or hassle-free way, whilst giving customers or end users that sense of transparency and reliability about carrying or the act of carrying those goods around the world. If you look at, like, you know, e-commerce, like you mentioned, I mean, I think e-commerce, or even the basic industry such as retail that we all participate in, you know, the development of having a robust supply chain is probably more important now than it ever has been, in particular when you look at its connection to customers. So there are some examples, I guess, of e-commerce companies and retailers that do that really well. And then there's, and that really shows when you dig a little bit deeper into customer experience and then satisfaction. And obviously, particularly for our online retailers, that whole repeat purchase. If you have good shipping, supply robust, supply chain, then that tends to show up in terms of customers shipping with you more often.
Cool. So, definitely. I think another key thing when somebody's, you know, I think a lot, I went up the supply chain. I started just kind of shipping anything I could buy locally in the US, and then started buying from wholesalers and then from China. How do you decide, you know, air or sea, or you even mentioned in the introduction, you know, there's different types of air shipments. So is there some kind of logic there?
Logic? I always say to customers that you need to consider, you know, start right from the start, which is what's the objective of what you're shipping? And we always tell our clients, there are kind of four key basic questions that you should ask yourself. You know, what's the contents of your shipment? And for example, there are some contents of shipment that you just cannot send by air, for example. So that makes it pretty easy, right? Mm-hmm. Then what's the kind of cost position or what's your budget in regarding to your shipping? If you have a solid allowance for budgeting, then I would always say, and it's suitable for air, then I would say go air. What's your respective timeline for shipping goods? If you want to do it quickly, then obviously air. If you're in no hurry, then putting it on a sea cargo's no problems. And fourth question around, you know, how much do you value reliability, service and support through the shipping process, particularly when it comes to things like customs clearance, help, service levels, tracking, and obviously the reliability of the carriers. So if you can answer those sort of four questions, I think that often helps people to trigger whether or not it's a sea shipment or an air shipment. Now, my personal view is that if you have high contents, sensitive, high value products, then you should try and air ship those products as much as you can, for lots of simple reasons around insurance, reliability, speed of which you get the products, and often the traceability of those products is much easier than if you sit them on a cargo for 3 to 4 weeks.
Exactly. So I guess there's cargo. Is cargo sea, or am I wrong?
Yeah, no, cargo. Cargo's referred to sea. Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Well, I mean, you can say sea. I would always say sea cargo, but you can say air cargo as well if it's bigger, but yeah, sea or air should be defined by sea or air themselves.
Got it. So then going into cargo, there's LCL, I think, and FCL. So that's probably some people have dealt with that if they've done any kind of sea shipments, but maybe give some people some ideas.
Yeah, sure. I think I'd always say to people, first and foremost, you know, there are some key considerations that you need to make when you're looking at an LCL versus LCL, which is, you know, the first thing is for LCL, it lets you keep your inventory low, which is the good thing, right? So if you have a smaller budget or you're a bit leaner on the cash flow side of things and you want to just maintain the level of stock and keep it low, then try and push for an LCL shipment. The problem with LCL, is that it increases your risks of potentially damaged goods. So for example, when you go into an LCL situation, you're sharing your container with someone else. So I might have a third, you have a third, and someone else has a third. Now I might have wine, you might have batteries, and the next person might have some form of seafood. And so there are lots of things around, you know, the fact that your shipment is being shared with others, and that can often cause issues around dangerous objects, or there could be like a bad smell in the container, it could affect your product. And so often with LCL, there's a lot less control around where your product gets put, as well as the fact that it is more liable for perhaps damage if it's not packed properly or it's packed among other products that move around a bit more. Looking at FCL on the flip side, FCL is generally always cheaper than LCL, and that's because carriers it's more cost effective to put on a per unit basis into one container versus splitting it up across, you know, three different shippers on one container like LCL is. So I would always say to people, if you can afford an FCL, then you should do that. It's easier when it comes to around importing fees, which are fixed, and often you get one set price, which is much easier as well. And the other major benefit of FCL, I guess, is that you get your products centralized into one piece of cargo versus being split up. And obviously you do get them equally quicker when it gets through the port, because then there's no mucking around subdividing the container into your product, my product, and Bob's product over there. So I would always sort of recommend FCL if you can. But then again, you know, LCL is fine, but there are more risks and a little bit more time associated with LCL when it gets into port and then getting it delivered to you. And obviously a lot of the big shippers are holding 20-foot, 40-foot containers themselves with no problem. But for the smaller shippers, if you can even partner up with someone else that's moving from the same factory or the same area in the world and try and partner up and share an LCL container, at least that way you're you know what the contents of the other goods are going into that container are.
Got it. So I think you kind of answered in the question too, but I think stepping back a little bit, some people might not know it. I think it means less than container load, and FCL is full container load.
That's correct. Yeah, less container load and full container load. So a bit of a mouthful, and I think it goes back to your question around the first question, which is what makes this industry complex is there's a huge amount of terminology that often, you know, and, you know, I come from a commodities background in line with my supplier background as well. And, you know, you can have full conversations, just an acronym. So so when you are talking to your shippers, I'd always say speak English and or speak whatever language you're coming from, but also make sure you split those acronyms up so you really understand what they mean.
Yeah, exactly. It is a huge amount of different acronyms. I think it's probably for the languages, which kind of goes to my next question or topic is I did some pretty crazy trades back when I was doing some sourcing, and we had one client that had a few different locations. They wanted did some promotional items, so it was like all kinds of different products, like t-shirts and hats and everything. And one went to Argentina, and it was really nuts. It was an LCL shipment, so I it definitely got mixed with other people's stuff. And then I didn't even know it was going to all these different ports, but it was the slowest boat I think ever. I think it was like two months or more, maybe even into between 2 to 3 months, I think. And client was always checking for a status update. And maybe this is a little bit more of an advanced question, but I had to call them. But I guess you would know you're going to be taking that much time, that many ports, or is it because it's just an obscure location? Maybe I guess if you're shipping to LA or to some of these high frequency ports, there's like a lot of shipments going there and goes direct. It's like, I guess like an airplane or.
Yeah, so I think if you're doing obviously sea is much more complex. You know, air freight is much easier. It tends to be a lot more direct. There may be one or two stops, perhaps like a long haul 24-hour flight coming out of New Zealand, for example, may stop into one of the Asian markets before it gets into Europe, for example. But for sea, obviously a lot more complicated. And it just comes down to the supply chain efficiency of that particular shipper. So obviously ships only want to be at sea when they've got full container loads and a full boat load. So if that means that they have to work their way down the southern coast of China picking up three or four different loads to get themselves full by the time they hit the South China Sea and getting into the Pacific, then that's what they're going to do. And that often obviously leads a direct correlation to time for which your goods at sea. And then obviously there's always a bit of ambiguity around shippers and particularly around how long things take. So I can sort of give you some rough timelines on when things happen, but generally, if you're shipping sort of, you know, into the US onto the eastern coastline, you know, you're looking anywhere between sort of 25 and 35 days on average shipping to the west. Anywhere between, in terms of the air, you're looking at only between 2 and 5 days. Anywhere to Europe, you're looking at sort of again by sea, 23 to 28 on average, and then only about 2 to 5 days when it comes to air. So. Cool. So in terms of transit times, that's again what I always recommend if you can freight. Right by year, then that's much more effective in terms of getting your goods to ground and obviously getting them with your end user as possible. And obviously it reduces a huge amount of risk that sits in something sitting on the water for 3 weeks. But then again, you don't always have control of these things either. So choosing a very good solid cargo provider will allow you to have a little bit more confidence around those sea shipment times.
Awesome. Thanks for those dates. I know people are always curious how long things take. And so, these are some questions I even have, and I'm not doing trading actively right now, but you know, I've done it for many years. But air shipment, is there really one kind of air, or is there?
Again, this goes down to the complexity. That isn't really that complex at all. It's really just like anywhere. It's but like going to a hotel. You know, you pay for a basic. The hotel is the same, but you pay for like an entry level basic room, and then you might pay for a suite, and then you pay for a deluxe, and then you pay for a deluxe suite. So air shipping is kind of the same. You know, you have what we call an international express, which is your quickest transit times, which is exactly what we do at InExpress. So we move items around the world as quickly as we can with our carriers. And obviously that's a premium service and it's a convenience-based service, because if you have goods, for example, if you're shipping wine, for example, and you need to move it, that's a sort of product that's high value and you want it to hit the ground as soon as possible. After that, you kind of have international economy plus. This is pretty generic in terms of the industry, and some of the carriers will refer to it differently, but this is kind of the one level down from Express, and you're looking at 5 to 10 days. Two to five days on that, and that would be sort of slightly slower than Express, but still pretty quick, really, relatively. So, for example, a lot of e-commerce companies are operating that kind of 7-day window. That's the sort of look at they'd be looking at around economy plus. And then obviously there's the next layer down, which is kind of international slow economy, we call it, and that's sort of 10 to 15 days, and then there's international post. So it's important to remember that post is obviously the slowest, and post is obviously our traditional kind of channel for shipping things around the world, particularly as consumers. If we're just going down to the post office, our expectation is that things won't get there quickly. So if you're looking to move goods quickly, particularly if you're an online retailer and you want to move quick, you know, within that kind of 7-day window mark, be sure to look at the carrier and look at the times for which the products move across the transit zones that you're shipping to. So if you're shipping out of Asia, for example, Hong Kong into Australia, it's a sort of a 1 to 2 day turnaround time from departure into landing with the end user.
Got it. Interesting. Yeah, I like that idea of like just getting it's a hotel, but maybe you're just getting different upgrades in the hotel.
Exactly. So, and obviously the price correlates itself naturally. So, you know, it's just like anything, you pay for the convenience, and the convenience is what costs you. So if you want something there in a day, you pay for that.
So yeah, going into prices, I'm sure people are always kind of overwhelmed with how do they get a price? Do they call up all these different brokers? And then there's also I've been convinced it's true. Sometimes it's cheaper to use a quote unquote middleman or an agent rather than a courier directly, because they get bulk rate and they can usually give you a cheaper price. So is there any insights here?
Yeah, of course. I mean, so fundamentally our business in Express is exactly that. We are a freight consolidator that brings together carriers on a bulk buying basis, and then we pass those discount rates directly onto our carriers, and we just live and die by the arbitrage between the difference.
Awesome.
So that's where brokers really, really kind of do well and do really add value, because they can consolidate and then add that value to the shippers. But look, there are lots of different ways you can get rates. You can go obviously directly to the carriers. You can go via an agent. You can go through an online consolidator where you have no relationship or anything. You just log on and get the rates. But, you know, there can be huge degree of variations across the different carriers, and there can be a lot of hidden costs among the smaller carriers and perhaps less known ones who may, you know, on the surface appear to be the cheapest, but when you get the bill, you get the XYZ in addition to the base price that they quoted you at the start. So there are some kind of core factors you should look at when you're looking at shipping, and it's very hard to compare things on a like-for-like basis, because carriers often give different criteria for different sets of pricing. But try and at least assess by sort of core dimensions around package size, package weight by dimension, usually length times width times height, and that's usually in a centimetre or inches depending on whereabouts in the world you are. Departing country, destination country, any tracking services or fees that are associated with that, and then insurance. Obviously, insurance is taken often by the shipper, as well as obviously the shippers have their own liability insurance as well. Always exclude fuel, as fuel is a fixed. It's not a fixed price, but it's a fixed cost in terms of what goes on to the fuel goes on to the shipping price at the end. I mean, that usually ranges between sort of 5 to 15%, and fuel pricing is pretty standard across the industry, I have to say, and it just moves in line with international crude prices. So at the moment, obviously, the oil prices are at a fairly low price, so the fuel component of your shipping bills are fairly low at the moment versus what it was 18 months ago. And then there can be other costs, of course, such as, you know, the likes of if a package is oversized, particularly on air, where it's measured on length, the width and the height. So be careful that you're aware if you're shipping something that's deemed to be oversized. And then obviously the likes of dangerous goods often attract a premium, which you need to be aware of, and other sources like that, which can add to your total costs. So of course you can go to the carriers themselves, but the problem with going to the carriers themselves, particularly if you're an SME, you know, they will just give you a flat rate off the shelf, yeah? Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess, where the role of an agent or a broker or whatever you want to call it kind of comes in, provides that consolidated view, and then is able to give that that best possible rate to you, as well as give you on top of that, you know, the service and the understanding and perhaps even a slightly different perspective on your shipping solution. You know, particularly, yeah, our focus is not just around rates. It's around actually giving clients what's the best methodology for this type of shipping that you need to do. What's going to service that objective, going back to kind of what e-shipping and so forth, to make sure that clients really just get more value than just a price. But particularly if you're SME, calling a carrier up directly is just going to result in a pretty shelf price, or what I would call a shelf price. God. Unless you represent really big volume, the big carriers, the big global carriers really aren't that interested.
Got it. Cool. So that's good for you, right? So you can spread that savings off to the smaller guys.
Yeah, and that's exactly how we have a business. That's our model, right? So, and that's, I think so far, InXpress in Hong Kong's been here just over 2 years. And in that time, you know, we've proven that we can make a real difference to these SME shippers by giving them much more value and saving that kind of time, not having to deal with the big carriers and the hassle, and obviously the technology platform too, which means they can automate their shipments pretty easily.
Great. So another thing I think people are confused about is import broker is a different company or person or than a shipper, or is it sometimes, I guess it depends if that company has the capabilities.
Yeah, it just comes down to whether or not that company has the capabilities. There are independent brokers, of course, but there are some good online providers, particularly if you're a smaller company. There's a really good site called dutycalculator.com, which is run by Pitney Bowes and is a global trade solutions company, and they're a paid subscription service for duties and taxes, but you can go on there and you can get a very, very accurate importer duty. And other carriers offer the service themselves. InXpress, we do provide the support on it as best as we can, but obviously, you know, sometimes there is, again, some ambiguity around import taxes, depending on what jurisdiction you're sitting in, and also how people classify goods as well, yeah. which can be confusing.
Yeah, so maybe this is a weird one for you, but I always think of the keyword HTC, another acronym. Mm. So that's a U.S. thing? That's an import duty that pops up when somebody's shipping into the US?
Yeah, it's actually not just limited to the U.S. So the HTC is just a tariff code, which is harmonized tariff code, I should say, which is just like the periodic table of shipping in terms of there are different letters and codes for different types of products and classification of products that you're shipping. And actually the system's used right across the world. So yeah, put very simply, if you had a packing list, for example, which needs to contain, you know, which you'll need to specify what the contents are, you just go into the HTC, have a look at, you know, type in your respective contents of your goods. So for example, if it's a book, type in book, and then that will give you a respective HTC code, and you'll need to include that on your packaging slip. So it's kind of like the idea that when you go into lots of different customs, they can correlate the HTC as kind of a universal understanding of what a content description is, and therefore then they assess it based on that for duty purposes.
Good.
So yeah, as freight consultants, I guess, what we're able to do is provide pretty accurate HTC codes for people. And fortunately enough, the HTC is actually built into our platform. So that means that you can, when you're building a packing list on the system, you can actually do that as you go and be as accurate as you can, because, you know, we've seen firsthand a lot of clients, haven't declared things properly and therefore have been stung at the other end when they've come to get their duty bill, particularly for the likes of e-commerce shippers who, you know, are trying to get around it, which we can have a chat a little bit about later. But that's kind of really important to get that classification right. And other news, actually, recently regarding the US, they've actually increased their de minimums, which is into the US, from $200 to $800. So anything under $800 now is not subject to attract duty. So that's really good news as well for people shipping into the US as well. Nice. So historically $200, and now they've lifted that to $800. So
cool.
The Obama administration, you can thank him for that one.
Damn. For finally something good in for taxes.
Some good news for the US.
Going kind of funny into my next question. This is maybe something that I'll just say anonymous people ask me, but they want to change the pricing on their packing slips it's like they buy it for $1. They won't even say they bought it for 50 cents, or, you know, like they're trying to minimize the total. I think that's a risky thing and probably a stupid thing, but Maybe yeah, people still think about that, but
yeah, sure. Look, I probably couldn't probably shouldn't comment on what you should declare on your packing slip regarding the cost of things. But you know, if you're shipping internationally and you're shipping frequently, just I guess I would always say be sure of the duty and tax implications of those markets. You know, there's something that we can help with in terms of, you know, if you did declare something as a gift, continue to declare it as a gift, and you are a frequent shipper, it's very likely that the more savvy custom jurisdictions would probably pick you up for that, and then you can become a blacklisted shipper, which means that you get an X against your name at a customs level, and sometimes they can hold product, and they can hold it for a long time, or they might even, worst case scenario, they might even send it back to you. So I think, you know, I would always say play by the rules, but be creative where you can be.
All right, I like that answer. Cool, man. So when, I guess, how much time should somebody give to finding the right place to ship and to get the, so then maybe they place an order with the factory says it'll be 2 weeks or maybe more, maybe a month. And how, when should they start dialing or looking people like you up?
Yeah, look, I think personally, if you're in manufacturing or you've got the development of a product somewhere in the world, I would always say don't wait. I think the supply chain competency is just as important as the development of your product, because at the end of the day, if you can't get your product to UN users within the right suitable sort of time or commitment that you've given to the market you're operating, then I think that already puts you on the back foot. So I would always say start as soon as you're starting. Once you've got your, obviously, once you're working with the manufacturers, start looking at your supply chain. I'd particularly give a bit of a push to the e-commerce providers out there. It's absolutely cornerstone to your business. So don't just think it's we're manufacturing a great product, we're going to sell it on Amazon, and we're going to sell it on our own platform, and then we're going to flick it out. Because the flicking it out part's often the hardest part of it all, particularly when it comes to all the uncertainties and all the ambiguity around cost, jurisdiction that you're coming into, customs, to finding the right carrier. So really give yourself enough time, and obviously dial up as many different carriers as you can. Really try and learn how the industry works, and you'll get a range of different answers from different carriers, and try and find some really trustworthy carriers and reputable carriers as well. And it might cost you a little bit more, but you know, it's much better dealing with those larger trusted brands and situations where you're particularly where you're new and you're trying to get your product to the market as quickly and as safely as possible.
Got it. Great. So the factory a lot of times offers their contacts. Sometimes yep. Their rates can be pretty good, or yeah. Is there any dangers here?
Yeah, look, I think like any good business, they're looking at other ways they can secure some income, right? The shipping represents another income stream for them to do that. So they kind of, in some senses, become a little broker themselves, consolidate all their manufacturing volume and then flick it out, right? So so look, from their perspective, I can understand why they do it. Be careful not to get stuck into a manufacturer that will only let you ship through them. I think it's important to have flexibility or choice around how you want to move your own product. Of course, if you're dealing with a trusted representative from a company, then and they're shipping and they've had no sort of historical issues with their shippers, with their shipping competency, then I think that's worth considering. But I think if you look at it from the other end of the view, which is sort of the buyer's view, if the buyer knows that you're dealing with someone that's maybe not as credible or as trusted, and there's more likelihood of your customer's products going missing, then maybe you need to be careful around how you manage that component. And again, speaking with the brokers or the agents who don't really have the infrastructure investments themselves, therefore they're a little bit less biased, because we're not really focused on asset optimization, more interested in trying to find the right solution for people is maybe a good place to start. But get lots of rates, compare, and try and learn as much about it as you can before you make your decision.
Got it. Yeah, I guess there's nothing wrong with them making a little kickback on their
deal. Oh, absolutely not. You know, 100% not. No, it's completely fine. As long as it's reasonable and it's trusted, I think that's the most important thing.
So I just had a call with somebody a couple of days ago. He's trying to keep more of his product on the Asia side rather than just LCL or FCL it over to the US to ship. So have you any experience in fulfillment and, you know, in Asia or Hong Kong?
Yeah. I mean, look, it's definitely fulfillment and e-commerce are the two trending areas of logistics right now. There's no doubt about that. I mean, there's good examples of a number of new Hong Kong-based startups that are focusing in this area. You know, it's become particularly popular as companies that work in the e-commerce don't want to have to go out and rent or warehouse space themselves, which can obviously be a pretty big kind of cost burden. So, you know, this idea of sort of bulk collection and then individual packing orders is something we do, and we do have experience, and we have quite a few clients that are looking at this, at looking at different fulfillment opportunities. But the idea really is that, you know, goods are transported in bulk to Hong Kong, and then the goods are warehoused and then dispatched via the our express platform. But you know, I would say for fulfillment, always look to the internationally recognised companies for this, and also local companies that have credibility and that work with really strong carriers, particularly if you're warehousing lots of different SKUs and lots of different products going to lots of different parts of the world as well. The costs associated with e-commerce generally are done on bulk collection, warehousing or storage, and then the cost of the shipping itself. So generally what you get at the end of that is you kind of get a per unit type rate, which you can then reapply back through your whole sort of supply chain, if you back it right back to when you're manufacturing through to your marketing costs, and then right onto what your end customer pays as well. So pretty important to remember that it is a more cost-effective way. E-commerce is becoming increasingly popular, but again, there are lots of good choices around carriers and providers out there, and the rates and the methodology around pricing is a little bit confusing. It can be a little bit confusing because obviously it's a fairly complex kind of idea that you're warehousing in one single warehouse. You might have 100,000 different products, and therefore all those products take different amounts of space. So you can start to kind of get a sense of the complication around the math that goes into calculating how much one particular product takes of space, and therefore how much time does it take for a pick and pack, and then where is it being shipped to. So just be mindful of the methodology of rates and the credibility of the companies or the fulfillment warehouses you're looking at, but something we definitely can provide some help onto.
Okay, got it, Nick. Thanks. And keeping things in control is my next kind of question. But sometimes people talk about buying from a factory. They say you should kind of check in regularly. I guess, of course, if it's just an air shipment with 2 or 3 days, there's not much checking in. But how often should they check in with their like shipping status, say it's on sea, or make sure that things are on time or under control, you know?
Yeah. Generally, there's sort of like three key areas for control. I mean, obviously, the obvious one is around transparency of tracking, right? If you can see where your product is, that makes a big difference. And also, it kind of helps you sleep at night, particularly for those out there that are manufacturing, you know, maybe 10,000, 100,000 units of something, knowing that your product is traceable is pretty important. But I think dealing with people that have strong inventory management systems is pretty important. So when you're looking at the side of it and around keeping control of base, if it's stock sitting in your own warehouse or sitting in someone else's, that you have full traceability and transparency of the inventory you've got on hand. You know, align yourself with a reputable company. It goes back to kind of dealing with, you know, credible, reputable carriers who have experience. And also they might not necessarily always be the cheapest, but they'll always get the job done and do it well. I think the other thing around control is making sure that you have points of contact within a company that you can go to if there's any concerns or questions or issues about your shipment. You know, obviously the whole force majeure kind of idea, anything can happen anywhere in the world at any time. And sadly, we're seeing that throughout the world at the moment. But if you look at, you know, having good contacts in place so you can check your product, check where it is, even if you don't necessarily have a tracking tool, and having an account manager or a representative that you can trust that can give you an update as well, as also helps around keeping yourself calm, particularly when you've got a whole lot of working capital sitting in the air or at sea. And that always helps as well.
Got it. Cool. I don't know if you want to share some scarier stories or maybe some things people can learn from that maybe somebody you've heard that didn't do things correctly or could have done things better.
Yeah, I mean, the worst stories I hear are generally people that don't declare custom duty correctly. That tends to be the worst. I mean, obviously, there's always the obvious things like losing something goes missing, right? But generally, carriers always take responsibility. If it's in their hands, then generally it's their responsibility, particularly on the air side. So you've got sort of the idea that they should have their own liability insurance to cover those types of things. Again, dealing with reputable companies helps in this space because generally they don't want to, you know, an upset client, and they'll do whatever it is they can remedy the situation. I have seen clients lose product or product go missing. Of course, or it gets there and it's the wrong package. It's someone else's package. And anyway, bills is being shipped from one package to another. That can happen. But I would probably say the worst I've heard is the declarations. We've had, not our clients, but clients of ours have declared goods incorrectly and been stung with some pretty hefty, like £10,000 type bills. In terms of duty and taxes, and you know they've tried to get around the system. So, like I said, I think you need to be, you know, follow the rules and be creative where you can be, rather than just kind of straight up non-declaring things correctly, because things can kind of backfire pretty quickly, and obviously stock gets held in customs until bills are paid, and then obviously your end users don't get what they want. So yeah, biggest things are, yeah, obviously losing things, but generally carriers are very good, particularly carriers that we work with. We don't, in the 2 years we've been operating, I think we've had one or two issues with products that have subsequently been found, and obviously, you know, we're able to provide support around that whole duty declaration component as well. But credible brands for this particular sort of stuff help, because if you're dealing with a smaller company and they don't have the resources or the tools, then product goes missing, and generally it's sort of a sorry, can't do much.
Oh man, oh, scary. All right, well,
and having your own company insurance is obviously pretty important too. So, you know, if you are shipping lots of goods, make sure you have insurance for that as well, even if you are a small, you know, small e-commerce retailer as well.
So I don't want to end on a negative. What about some positives? Like, how long is this? So say something does get lost. I mean, you say these carriers are pretty good. I mean, how does the process work to get some money back? Or
yeah, so generally, I mean, so for example, in Hong Kong, DHL is one of our biggest carriers, for example. They do a big chunk of our work. And the process is if a product goes missing, they come to us, because obviously we represent the client. And then one of our sales guys will manage the escalate the issue to our respective DHL counterparts. That then goes into an investigation into DHL. The great thing about the larger carriers is they have very, very good traceable technology through the whole process of booking collection once it's in the air and then once it gets down. So generally, if a product's gone missing, it's very quick to find out where it's gone missing to. So for example, we had a shipment last week that was meant to be going to Paris, somehow landed in London. Obviously didn't land in the port it was meant to, and it didn't land in the time zone it was meant to, in the committed time, the transit time. So the product was quickly investigated, realised it was in London. It was on the first flight out to Paris, as quick as that, really. So I think that was sort of within maybe 3 hours of the investigation being launched. So pretty quick. Obviously can be more complicated than that, but the first port of call would be go straight to your carrier, escalate the issue, always quote the reference if there's an airway bill number or an invoice number or the shipment number. Quote that, and hopefully your carriers will move as quick as they can. From our experience, it's pretty quick for the carriers we work with, but I know that's not necessarily the case with all of the carriers across this part of the world.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of maybe some Chinese carriers I won't mention that have been CC'd on emails of people that want to burn their place down, so it can get a little bit rough.
Look, I think it just, you know, I always say to people, go with your gut feel. What feels right is probably right, you know, in terms of if you're doing your due diligence or your procurement for a vendor, for a supplier, to do your carrying work, then, you know, just it's not necessarily all about bottom line numbers. It's about how you feel about the carrier and whether or not in those types of situations would they do the right thing.
Got it. All right, Nick, this has been very helpful, and I respect your time. It's been great. So how can people reach out to you and your business, and maybe a little bit more about what you guys do?
Yeah, sure. So, anyone that's interested to either have a chat or that's Hong Kong-based or over the phone or Skype or whatever can reach out. You can reach me on my email, Nick, that's just N-I-C-K .Bartlett, B-A-R-T-L-E-T-T at inexpress.com, or you can find us at hk.inexpress.com. Inexpress is a global company. It's been operating out of the UK since 99. We've only been in Asia for the last 2 years. We work with a number of different carriers, but most noticeably globally, DHL, where we have an exclusive agreement with whereby we can kind of get that group buying idea and then the consolidation of those rates and then pass those rates on to customers. Our proposition is very simple. It's around saving customers time, money and hassle. You know, we have a very good technology product that allows us to be connected directly to the carriers. And customers can simply log on and log their respective shipments for the day. And then those are all counted directly to the carriers, and carriers come and collect. So it's a real sort of set and forget model, which is great. And our focus is very much around SMEs. We want to try and make a difference to the SME companies that operate out of this part of the world. Awesome. And obviously on top of that, we can provide some consultancy service too around, helping you with the best methodology for shipping and connect you with some of the world's leading carriers.
Great, great. Awesome, Nick. So thank you so much for coming on, and we'll speak soon. All right.
Very good. Thanks.
Thank you, Nick, for coming on and sharing so openly. What do you guys think? I know a lot of people like the logistics topics, and he's a hardworking guy in Hong Kong for many years now. And if you're willing to talk to him, he'll help you out, I'm sure, with any questions you might have, and also maybe consider using his business. No affiliate link for me, but I just think Nick's awesome, and you should consider it. So enjoy the rest of your week. I'm going to get back to breakfast with my family here before I head off to Philippines. And I did make a blog post about some ideas for future episodes for podcasts and blogs and other activities, just kind of brainstorming ideas. If you want to check that out, we have a link to it on globalfromasia.com/episode129. And also, since I'm in the Philippines, I think this is Global from Asia, so I'm going to do some topics on Philippines and maybe even other parts of Asia in the future, so business and businesses and other things happening. So I hope you guys like that. I always appreciate feedback and ideas for future shows. And without further ado, enjoy the rest of your day. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.